Good morning. Welcome to everyone. We have visitors, and we have visitors often. We're glad that you're here. I want you to come back every chance you get. Anyone know who Samson Parker is? Ever hear the name Samson Parker? Samson Parker was a farmer. And he was working with some equipment, and some grass got tangled up, and he walked around with the equipment running. First mistake. Was wearing gloves. That's always a problem as well. Remind me to tell you about wearing gloves and getting one caught up in a metal shaft running about, I don't know, 300, 400, 500 RPM in a lathe, and that's not a fun thing to have happen to you. But this guy got his glove caught in the machinery, and it started chewing on his fingers, pulled his hand down into it. He finally, I don't know whether he got it stopped or what, but he was caught after it had gotten up to his arm. And so he's there yelling for help and screaming and everything, and the piece of equipment caught on fire. Or the grass around it, all the grass and stuff that was in it. And it caught on fire. His personal account of that was that when he was there struggling and screaming for somebody to help, that the flesh started falling off because of the flames. And he didn't know what else he was going to do. So I don't want to just totally shock you or gross you out, but he took out his knife and began to cut and cut his arm off. Struggled up to the road, and fortunately a firefighter happened to be driving by who knew how to give him first aid, tourniquet the limb. But he saved his life when he cut his arm off. He said, well, how in the world could somebody do this? Let me ask you another question. Do you know who Aaron Ralston is? Maybe you've heard of Aaron Ralston. And you guys? Outdoorsmen? Hikers? Backpackers? Aaron Ralston forgot to tell anybody where he was going when he was hiking. And so he went out into the maze out in Utah, Arizona, and was walking through one of these canyons that looked like this. You see the sand in the bottom, and you've seen the pictures of the bright red sandstone out there and everything. He dislodged a 8-ton boulder, and it caught his arm and pinned it. And he took his multifunction tool after 5 days. Everything, all supplies exhausted. He knew he was going to die. Nobody knew where he was. Seldom visited area. He took out his multifunction tool and cut off his arm and walked out to safety. We're not here to talk about what kind of fortitude, what kind of courage, what kind of desperation or anything would cause a man to do that. We're here to talk about something else. We're going to pick up our lessons on the Sermon on the Mount, but it is not removed from our theme of this year, which is what? Evangelism through word and deed. Our lives are a reflection of the faith that we have. Would you agree with that? And so if our lives are not what they ought to be, then it may be that our faith is suspect and we need to increase our faith. I'm convinced we ought to be praying like the disciples, the people who were following the Lord prayed, Lord, increase our faith. Lord, teach us how to pray. Lord, question after question, do this. They're pleading with the Lord to open their minds. Give them insight. What is this all about? Is the kingdom coming right away? What's the nature of it? Questions that they had. Well, Jesus, when he begins his preaching, preaches the greatest sermon ever preached. And so we're going to get back on the theme of, turn it on, Byron, and it will work better, the Sermon on the Mount. And for those of you who are visiting, this series has been dealing with Jesus Christ's authority. The people recognized his authority. There's no doubt that when he said, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I'll liken him to a man who builds his house upon the rock. Whoever hears these sayings of mine and does not do them, I will liken him to a man who builds his house upon the sand. Those are authoritative statements, and they got it. They were amazed. They marveled afterward and said, he preaches as one who has authority. He speaks as one who has authority, not as the scribes. They understood it. And he exercises authority in our lives in a number of areas, and this sermon introduces some of them. And the one that we're going to discuss this morning is not the most pleasant subject to discuss, but it is one that we need to discuss. The Lord has it right in the middle of his great Sermon on the Mount. And so we're going to talk about it. Jesus' authority over our morals. Over our morals. And there are several areas that we could discuss when we talk about this, but I'm going to go right to the one that Jesus used, and let's read it together. Now, I'm going to put the ESV up on the board so you can read along in the ESV, because a lot of people use it, but I'll be reading from the New King James Version. And we're going to talk about lust this morning. This is lust for a Sunday morning sermon. Isn't that kind of a dark subject and discouraging kind of subject? Well, it is a subject that the Lord saw fit to discuss in his Sermon on the Mount when he's trying to get the mindset of the people so that they could receive the kingdom and be participants in the kingdom. The kingdom was coming in the lifetime of some of those disciples, Mark chapter 9. There are some of you who will not taste of death till you see the kingdom come with power. We spoke about that in our class this morning. And if you're going to be one of the citizens of the kingdom of the Lord, then there's a standard of behavior, there's a standard of thought that fits that kind of a kingdom. It's a spiritual kingdom, a kingdom of love, joy, peace, and the Holy Spirit. It is a kingdom of walking in the Spirit and in the light, not walking in darkness, not walking according to the course of this world, not being slaves to sin. And so we have to deal with these things. We have to attempt to overcome them. And there's help for that. Now, the Lord gives us that kind of help. He gives us that kind of help when he teaches us. And so let's read the passage together. It may be a little small. You can follow along in your own Bibles if you will. You have heard that it has been said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is profitable for you that one of your members perish, and not that your whole body be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it is profitable for you that one of your members perish, and that your whole body, and not that your whole body be cast into hell. Furthermore, it has been said, whoever puts away his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. Now that's in the middle of his Sermon on the Mount. The Lord dealt with subjects that cut right to the heart, that may be even embarrassing for us to think about, to contemplate, to discuss, to pass on to our young people, to our children. But the Lord was very vocal about issues of the heart. There are all kinds of them. We talked about his authority over the things that we say. We've talked about his authority in other areas. And we need to understand about, Jesus even deals with common everyday things that drag us down and take our attention away from him, like worrying. He spends a whole section in chapter 6, we've already preached on that, about worry. Don't be eaten up with worry. You can't serve God and mammon. And we cannot serve the flesh, no matter how, what area we're contemplating the flesh. This part of man's existence that draws on us and pulls us to be like the world and to lose sight of the spiritual, the moral, the upright, the righteous, the beautiful, the peaceful, the loving, and all of the other things that ought to characterize us as the people of God. This is authority over our eternal outcome, because he says it's better for one of your members to perish and that your whole body not be cast into hell. It's pretty clear that Jesus is serious about this. It's not just something that we pass over and say, yeah, that's a problem. Everybody's got it. Me too, but that's just the way we are. We're human. Jesus expects us to at least deal with the issue and to fight against the desires of the flesh that will cost us our souls if we're not careful. Jesus said lust can be controlled, and it must be. That's what he says. We can. We're going to have to start thinking seriously about exercising self-control in this area as well as several others. Few areas exist where more control is necessary, especially in the society in which we live. We are saturated with not only perversions of sex, but just the constant barrage of commercials, which are really well done. Sideline activities. Football season's coming along. Even in athletic competitions, it seems like that we're moving back. Doesn't it seem like it to you that we're moving back to where we actually get the word gymnasium? You know where that word came from, right? It's the Greek word. Gymnos. You know what that word means? It means naked. That's where we get our word gymnasium. Because of the ancient games, they didn't wear any clothes. And it looks like we're trying to head back that direction. It's amazing to me that the male gymnast do just fine with clothes on. And the male volleyball players do just fine with clothes on. And the male runners do just fine with clothes on. But the ladies can't seem to find enough clothes to make a pair of shorts and something to cover them up. I'll get off that soapbox now and just tell you, you know as well as I do, the network television is inundated. It's everywhere. You can't get away from it. So we're going to have to exercise tremendous control of our minds not to be caught up in this. To let it inflame our desires, which, by the way, are God-given. The desire of a man for a woman is a God-given desire. The desire to marry, the desire to procreate, God-given desires, but when we desire unlawful things, the Bible translators translate it lust, don't they? They would insert that word. Same word, is just for strong desire, but they would put that word lust in there. And the reason for that is because we see it's an illicit desire. It may be that we take a lawful desire and change our focus from, say, our wife to somebody else's wife or someone other. Or we take our desire for the necessities of life, blow them out of proportion, and we translate the word covetousness, or its synonym, love of silver. Paul said, I wouldn't have known lust if the law had not said, thou shalt not covet. But in Romans, it's the same word. It's epithumia, an intense desire, which is not a bad word in and of itself, but in some context it's bad because it's talking about desiring things that are wrong. And so desires, we've learned to control our desires and not let them control us. And that's what happens too often. And so with all the lewdness and the immorality and the uncleanness, and with TV, magazine, radio, everything, we're just going to have to fight the battle, guys especially, but not guys only. We've got to fight the battles. Remember that Jesus reaches down to the very depth of man. It's possible that the Jews understood the seventh commandment as merely outward. Merely outward. Thou shalt not commit adultery, and you shouldn't. Absolutely not. But Jesus said, I'll tell you something. You look at a woman in order to lust after her with intent in mind, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. And the heart's the problem. Jesus said, out of the heart come adulteries, fornications, murder, all of these other sins. They come out of the heart. It's not what comes out of the mouth that defiles a man, but what comes out of the heart. Or goes into the mouth, I'm sorry. But what comes out of the mouth that defiles the man. Because out of the things that come out of the mouth come from directly out of the heart. And so we're talking about heart control, controlling our minds and our hearts. The Lord dealt with thoughts. And it may very well be that those Jews neglected the 10th commandment, which says, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, ox, anything that your neighbor's. What else is in there? You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. Two things that we need to say before we start in all of this. You thought I'd started already, didn't you? We've already noted one of them. God gives us these desires. He gives us the psyche, the mind, and the body to fulfill these desires in lawful ways. You just ask anybody who's been married 10, 15, 20, 25, 35, 45, 49, November 3rd, with this lady, 50th next year. How can a 39-year-old woman be married for 49 years? I've never figured that out, but anyway. And they'll tell you it's the best thing next to heaven, next to our faith, next to the Lord. It's the closest, dearest. Can it be tumultuous? Well, of course it can. Life happens, doesn't it? But we have to know God gives us the lawful realm to fulfill our desires. He gives us strength and a mind, the human mind, a pattern after God's great mind, so that we can go to school, learn a trade, use our bodies, make a living, and understand that sometimes things happen that would prevent some of those things because everything's not working as it ought, whether our minds or whether our bodies. Illness, accident, and injury, and all kinds of things, birth defects and everything else can happen to somebody. I understand all of that. But we are designed to be able to fulfill every legitimate desire that we ought to have. And that's why he made us in his image with a spiritual nature, so that we can fulfill the desire to know where we came from and what we're about and where we're going and what life is about, so we can have that spiritual resonance with things spiritual, so we can respond to God. But I'll tell you, when our desires become perverted, when they turn on things that are unlawful for us, things where God tells us it's bad for us, we're getting in the way of his divine purpose for us. And we can bring on ourselves much misery in this life. God didn't give us these desires to torture us. He gave us the desires so that we could have fulfilling lives, pursue the things he wants us to pursue. I'd suggest that most of the mature saints in this audience know the things that I'm going to be discussing as we just make a few points before we finish. But it would be a naive of all of us to underestimate the power of lust. You think about that. It's powerful. It's enticing. It's addictive. And many mature Christians have fallen. Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived about it. So that's rather obvious, isn't it? We're going to have to avoid lust. Lust is defined simply as desire. It's just desire, but it's a desire for things that are unlawful. We need to understand some points about this. One is Jesus knows what's best for us, doesn't he? Are you going to say he doesn't? We'll read these passages, read the passages. And by the way, we're not going to talk about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. We're not going to do that, even though I just read a text that deals with that. Now, we'll do that, save that for another time. But could I tell you how many marriages have been broken up and how much misery has been caused because somebody began to look into desire? Somebody began to desire somebody else. Or somebody had desires that were greater than the relationship, so careers, the desire to get ahead, to make more money, to pursue whatever, made you neglect your homework. We've got to resist sin. We have to fight against it. Jesus is like a loving father who keeps his son from potential danger. He protects us. The first step in sin is the thought process. James chapter 1 tells us about it. There our desires for unlawful things acts like a siren singing her song and enticing us to come away. No matter what desire it is, I'm not just sexual desire, but desire in general. He says we're drawn away and enticed by our own desires. And therefore we need to keep our desires under control and know what desires we need to be desiring. There are things that we ought to be wanting more than anything else. David is a wonderful example of a man who let his desires, and if you don't think David desired the Lord, you're wrong. You never read the book of Psalms. If you don't think David was a man after God's own heart, you're wrong. He loved the Lord. He relied upon the Lord. We recite the 23rd Psalm and rejoice in that David understood who God was. And he loved the Lord, but David got all caught up in stuff that he shouldn't have been caught up in, and he fixed his eyes upon a woman that he had no right to look at. And lust filled his heart, and a whole chain of horrible events transpired as a result of it. And the sword never departed from his house afterward. He had heartache after heartache after that, because he did not avert his eyes, because he did not quash his lust. And it can happen to any of us. Lust is a sin, whether it's consummated or not, whether it's carried out or not. James gives the course of sin when it always ends up in sin. You cannot have unlawful desires and say, well, everybody has desires, and therefore desire is not a sin. Be careful, because sometimes we think lust, a desire for something unlawful, is a legitimate desire. It never is. And that's why the translators would translate this same word that's translated desire when Jesus said, with desire, I've desired to eat the Passover with you. Same word that's translated lust in James chapter 1. Same Greek word. But the context determines it's an unlawful desire. It's a desire that pulls us away from the Lord and results in sin. So it's a desire for something that will drag us into sin. An unlawful desire. And that's why lust is a very good word for that. Lust is deceptive. It's hard to avoid because it's deceptive. It's stealthy. It's clandestine. It's surreptitious. It catches us before we even know it. Because all of a sudden we're desiring something and we haven't... I didn't start out the day to be desirous of something that's unlawful for me as a child of God or as a human being. I didn't start out the day that way, but it gets that way. How does it get that way? Well, it's deceptive. Sin is deceptive. We can have lustful thoughts and not recognize them as evil, and sometimes we get too accustomed to them being in our minds. We need to learn to recognize them and reject them. We need to remember all the time, always be aware. The closer your relationship with God, the more active your prayer life, the more your thoughts are on Him, the more you realize God knows your every single thought. It's never private. We warn young people, don't do things on the computer that are on your phones. All of this stuff about sending photos that are enticing or whatever. All of this stuff about saying things that are enticing. Adults doing the same thing and kids are caught up in that stuff. And they say, well, nobody's going to find out because I've got really strong password. Nobody would ever get this. Or I've been assured that it's secure, that Facebook's secure, or something else is secure and everything. We seem to forget that the God of heaven knows. We just leave Him out of the picture altogether. So the closer we are to Him, the more cognizant we are that He's always watching us. And it's not that we resent that, because He's always watching us for our good and not for our harm. God's not watching us hoping we're going to mess up so He can quash us and smash us and send us to hell, torture us forever. Now, that's not the idea at all. God's watching us because He loves us and He cares about us and He's interested in us. He wants us to do the right thing, and He's given us the ability to do that, the information we need, the mind and the power to do what He wants us to do. Else He would never have challenged us to do it, or to refrain from doing things He wants us to refrain from. There's not only an eternal penalty when we separate ourselves from God and everything is revealed on Judgment Day and we turn out to be a lustful, profligate, sinful individual, rebellious to God's will for us, ignoring all of His help for us. There's also a penalty to pay now for lustful thoughts. Tantalize our minds with something we can't have, whether it's in the sexual nature or whether it has to do with being avaricious or covetousness or loving silver. Just can't stop thinking about this, that, or the other. It results in frustration, self-torture. You know, every once in a while, I'm sure all of us get on a diet. Kind of foolish, isn't it, to get on a diet and the first thing you do is you go to Bronze and walk down that aisle there and see all those flavors of ice cream. Man, when they got pistachio almond, that's it for me. I'm done. I am done. I am off my diet if I get on one. So the cure to that is never get on a diet, and then you don't have to violate it. But you know, there are things that are so tantalizing to us. We know what they are. We know what they are. We know what gets us in trouble. We know we ought not to watch this television show, go to that movie, hang out with that buddy. We know we ought not to do it. And yet we do it and we suffer because of it. We know we ought not to be there. We go around almost with a blush, if not on our faces, at least in our inner selves. Because I know better. I ought not to be here. I ought not to be looking at this. I ought not to be watching this. I ought not to be exploring this kind of stimulus, whatever it is. And yet, we do that. So, what's the problem? What causes this? It begins with our desires. Then weakness plays a part. Then mental imagery feeds the lust, visualizing the tantalizing promise of fulfillment and those kinds of things. Habitual thinking plays a part. The worldly person will be plagued by these thoughts, if he becomes a Christian and is in the habit of thinking these kinds of things, then he really suffers then because he knows better. And I want to do better. Lord, I made a commitment to you, and pow, it comes right there and it's there again, and you're struggling with that. Don't get started, young people. Don't get started. You'll suffer for it. Ask anyone who is addicted, and they'll tell you. Whether a new convert or whether a veteran Christian, the only answer to the practice of lust is thought control. Displacement helps. Think on pure things. Philippians 4:8. Whatever's pure, lovely, of good report. All the great, wonderful things we can think about. Fill your mind with those kinds of things and it will help. Think about God. Think about glory. Think about purity and righteousness and goodness. Think about people in high and noble ways. Fight against it. Galatians 5:16-24. Control it. Yes, we can. We can. Let me show you how displacement works. When you fill your mind with the good and positive and wonderful and glorious things of the gospel of Christ, with high and noble thoughts about other people, quit thinking the worst, quit looking for opportunities for the flesh. Make no occasion for the flesh. Let's practice it just for a second. I want everybody in the audience to forget the number 3. All right? Forget it. How many of you forgot? What happens? Well, I just reminded you of it, tell you to forget it. And when you're trying to forget it, what you're thinking about it, aren't you? Don't think about this. It reminds us of the writer of Proverbs when he's talking about wine. Don't look at the wine, he says, in the glass, and then try to abstain. Don't look at it as it sparkles and it swishes and you're smelling the bouquet of everything. You're sitting there like that. You're tantalizing yourself. You're making yourself want to do it. We do the same thing when we don't avoid situations, media, and other areas that will cause us to stumble, to get our thoughts off track. We fill it up with good and positive and noble things. Since lust and lustful thoughts are most often produced by what we drink in through our eyes, we need to avoid situations that cause us to have problems. Situations, media, people, whatever. Just quit. Ephesians 4:27 says, give no place to the devil. Because that's what we do. We just let him have his way with us if we don't try to control it. We have a responsibility to wear modest clothes, men and women. Fail and you may be responsible for inciting lust in someone else. Well, I thought it's always in the eyes of the beholder. Well, yes, the person who looks to lust is responsible. No doubt about that. But don't we know that we can become a stumbling block for someone else by our behavior? And you certainly can by being immodest. Every man in this audience, I would venture to guess, knows what kind of thoughts dancing can elicit. Every one of us knows that. You know that, don't you? You know what kind of thoughts can be brought on by dancing, modern dance, with a beautiful woman. We know that. Why don't we teach our children that? Teach our children that. So how important is it to be pure? Well, its importance is seen in the terms that Jesus used. If your eye offends you, pluck it out. That's pretty drastic, isn't it? If your hand offends you, cut it off. be better to go into heaven, physically maimed, but not spiritually maimed. We need to be willing to sacrifice. The word offend there is a snare or a stumbling block, literally a bait stick and a trap. If your job or recreation or hobby or friend causes you to stumble, you're going to have to cut those relationships. If you need to junk your computer, your iPhone, your iPad, your Samsung, whatever it is, your smartphone, which is not always that smart. Sometimes the phones are smarter than we are because we misuse them. And if you need to cut the cable, tear down the satellite, whatever, if you need to just swear off movies, whatever it takes. If that's what it takes, then do it. Whatever it takes. Ask yourself the question, as I ask myself, am I willing to make any sacrifice for Jesus? Jesus has asked us to be willing to die for Him. Right? He said He died for us. A real friend will lay down his life for his friends. That's greater love. The greater love. If we've got to be willing to die for the Lord and give up everything for Him, and we say that, and most people would. Most Christians would say, I would die for Jesus. But then we won't make a lesser sacrifice. We'll make lesser sacrifices. We won't stop our drugs. We won't stop our drinking. We won't stop our cursing. We won't stop our other filthy habits that we have. We won't stop our lustful thoughts, our participation in activities we ought not to be participating in. We won't quit telling filthy jokes. We won't do any of this. But I lay down my life for the Lord. You really think so? Do you really think you would? And then, obviously, marital faithfulness. As I said, we're not going to talk about that now. But just think about what it does to your significant other. Fellas, ladies, how do you feel? Guys, how do you think your wife would feel if she knows that you're engaging in lustful thoughts about other women? How do you think she feels about that? It's important. It's important for our families, but for our very souls. Jesus, as I said, knows what's best for men. The happiest people on earth are those that I said earlier have had all of these wonderful anniversaries, year after year, so connected that when one of them dies, you watch. It's not long till the other one's gone. We say, well, how come? How did they die so soon together and everything? Because everything just got taken away that makes getting up every morning a joy. It's not that they've lost their faith. It's just that now they just want to give up the body. I'm going to leave this thing and go on and be with the Lord and be with my wife. We need to take this stuff seriously. Jesus knows what's best for us. I'll tell you, we can hopelessly complicate our walk as a Christian by letting our desires rule us. Let's don't do it. The supreme work of our life is to be what God wants. So, how about that for a song? I surrender all. We just surrender anything that will stand between me and the Lord. My thoughts, any motives, any motivations that turn me away from God. I don't care what it is. Bad relationships, whatever they are. Bad thoughts about other people, control them. Jesus has the right to say, you can do better and you must. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, now's a good time. give your life to the Lord. Surrender to the gospel call. Be cleansed from every evil thought you ever had. Everyone. Every evil thought you ever had in all your life can be cleansed, forgiven. And He'll give you strength to face tomorrow with new resolve, new courage to do better and to walk more plainly. You come while we stand, while we sing.